want to talk about some of those things today. I know Mother's Day is always so sweet, and Father's Day gets a bad rap because it seems like there is correction or there is strong teaching. And I can't say that my teaching will not be strong today, but I also understand the tenor of men. I understand the language of men. I understand how men communicate with one another. And we live in this time when masculinity and just overall maleness is thought toxic. Being a man is no longer celebrated, as though a man should be ashamed to be a man. If men, particularly fathers, we are the butt of every joke. We are the portrayed goofball, buffoon on every television sitcom. Men are made fun of at every turn. He's the know-nothing, wacky guy on TV. And the traditional nature of a man is spun negatively. While the effeminate are preferred and celebrated. In case you didn't know, men roar. Men do not sashay. You ought to write that down in your note. You know how to spell sashay? Men roar. There is something innate in men. Can we be men? I give every man in this room permission to be who he is and who God called him to be. I'm not saying that gives you permission to be mean to anybody. I'm not saying that gives you permission to be some dictator in your home. If that's where your mind goes or if that's where your behavior goes, then we've got to correct. We've got to get back to center and be the man that God called us to be. Because we live in a time where the role of a father is often diminished or distorted. Some fathers are present in body but absent in spirit. And yet other fathers carry the weight of fatherhood with quiet courage, yet wonder if they are doing enough. One thing is for sure. One thing is for sure. A real man doesn't need anyone to tell him he isn't doing a good job. He feels that pressure every single day. My men in this room know exactly what I'm talking about. The feeling of pressure, the pressure to get it right, the pressure of wondering whether or not you are doing enough. And I'll say this about men, they desperately want to fix what is wrong. I'd give some counsel today that criticism only slows progress. It only stymies the success and the potential of success. Your man, he may need new tools. He may need better understanding. He may need an encouraging word. But eventually, he will get there. Eventually, he will arrive at the place that God has called him to be, because he has purpose on his life. I call this the measure of a man. What is the measure of man? Some may confuse this as net worth or as the accumulation of stocks and bonds. Another may think his measure is the cars that he drives or the houses that he lives in or the gold that he wears. But the true measure of a man is his character. It is his worth. It is his virtue. What is virtue? It's his morals. It's the way that he behaves within the moral boundary and the moral code of his life. And what's amazing is that his worth is often revealed when he is under pressure. You say, well, mine still has a temper. No, yours has a deep conviction and a strong passion for order. He just needs better tools to express himself. The ultimate measure of a man, Martin Luther King Jr. said, is not where he stands in moments of comfort and convenience, but where he stands at times of challenge and controversy. If you want to have an interesting conversation, I'm not saying it'll be an easy conversation. I'm not saying the conversation will happen all at once. It may be something you have to coax out of him or work to get to the root of, but you ought to ask your man sometime about the pressure that he feels. Ask him, don't scold him. What about this pressure? Ask him as a lover and not as a mother. Oh, I already know. No, you may only know the reactions to disrespect. Oh, Lord, have mercy. But if you make him feel safe, if you ask him and not them. I mean, I asked my girlfriends and they said, no, ask him. Ask him. I know he's tough with others, but he's hardest on himself. But hear me, he's fragile when he feels safe. Because man is always measuring. Man is always measuring. They were trying to find someone who could handle Goliath, and they had sent the best of the best of the best. They had sent the tallest. They had sent the strongest. They had sent the most agile. They had sent and looked and everybody. And you get to 1 Samuel 16 and 17, and everyone is completely confused and confounded about David and how David could be successful. And so he tells us the Lord does not look at the same things people look at. God doesn't look at that stuff. People look at the outward appearance, but the Lord looks at the heart. I'm not talking about seeing his reactions first. I know we may have to deal with some reactions. We may have to deal with some temper. We may have to deal with some anger issues. But if we can ever get beyond that, if we can ever push through, if we can ever see what is beneath all of that, we may find a man who is constantly measuring. A man who is constantly trying to figure out how to get it right. And hear me, for the godly man, for the spirit-filled man, for the men that are in this room with me today, for the men that are online with me today, there is another measure. Because his character and his worth and his virtue, they're all a part of it, but that's literally every man's measure, godly or not. The men riding up and down 142 in front of the church, that's the same measure that they have to work toward and work from and try to establish in their life. But the godly man, the spirit-filled man. He's got to move beyond the baseline. He's got to move beyond just the average. He's got to move beyond just the measure that is for every man. He's got to reach for something that is higher. Why? Because to whom much is given, much is required. Why? Because when you know better, you're going to do better. Why? Because when you hear truth, you have to process truth and apply truth to your life. It is the measure of man. Acts 13 and 22, he said, I have found David, a man after my own heart. You know what I say about David? He will do everything I want him to do. He will obey. He will follow. He will do what I'm asking him to do. Because if you know the story of David and his leadership, Saul was his mentor. Saul was his father-in-law even, but Saul refused to measure, or at least he measured the wrong things, and he led cocky. David measured and always felt unworthy. But we learn that God will use less and do more with it. God will take someone who is less talented but is more willing, and he will do more with less talent as long as the character is right. So how does God measure a man? Just a few things, and they're going to be on the screen for you. You might want to take a picture when they're all up there finally. But God measures a man by the condition of his heart. God measures a man by the strength of his integrity. God measures by the depth of that man's sacrifice. He measures by the firmness of his faith. And God measures a man by the legacy of love and truth that he leaves behind. Just leave that for 1 second. Because any one of these could be an area of challenge in your life. Grab a picture, it's going away in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. In any one of those could be an area of challenge that could serve as a list. It could serve as a starting point for the man that you want to be. You may be saying today, well, my heart is good, but I need some discernment in the area of integrity. Someone else may say, man, my faith is growing, but I'm not sure about the legacy part. I'm not sure how to pass down what is inside of me to my son, to my children. I don't know how to make that leak out onto my family. And so I need to work on that. What I don't want you to do is to see that list, to read that list, and think there is no way to ever achieve fullness. Most men will see that list and they see it as a challenge, because every man needs a challenge. Men thrive in challenge. Men need an obstacle course they can conquer. Men need something they can measure, and they need to know somehow they are making progress. They need to know that somehow they are gaining ground, that some way they are somehow accomplishing, conquering, being successful, that they are arriving where and are further along than what they were at this point some months ago, or a year ago, or 5 years ago, or whatever it may be. And what's really cool about men is that men are not interested in measuring others. women have a different thing going on. Y'all look at one another and dress up for one another, and I don't know, men don't understand all of that. Men just need a mirror. They just need to be able to see themselves so that they can determine what they need to do to get it right. And I want to take just a few moments in Mark chapter 9 this morning. We're going to get to some treats and some fun here in just a few moments. But there's this story that has really spoke to me these last few weeks in preparing to talk to our men. Mark 9, beginning at verse 24, the Bible said, when they came to the other disciples, Jesus, he had taken Peter, James, and John. They had been on the mountain that you and I know as Transfiguration. They had been up there talking about building temples and never coming down again, and Jesus was allowing them to see in a glimpse of some of the things that were to come, and they never wanted to leave, but Jesus said, no, we've got work to do. Let's go back down the mountain. And when they came down the mountain and arrived at the other disciples, they saw a large crowd around them and the teachers of the law arguing with them. Jesus, Peter, James, and John, they come from this holy moment, and when they get to where the other nine disciples are, there are the rulers, there are the priests, there are the Pharisees, they're all gathered around, and they are just arguing, they are just going at it, they are just fussing with one another. And I don't know when I've ever seen such a picture of people and church and religion in 2025, everybody just arguing with one another. But as soon as they saw Jesus, verse 15 said, as soon as all the people saw Jesus, they were overwhelmed with wonder and ran to greet him. When they saw Jesus, what's going to be our growth program? We got to let people see Jesus. How are we going to become the church that we envision and want and desire? We need to make sure people can see Jesus. It's not about them seeing a pastor. It's not about them seeing a worship team. It's not about them seeing our program. It's about people seeing Jesus. We're going to still have all that stuff, and we're going to do, and we're going to work, and we're going to minister to people on every level. But most importantly, we want people to see Jesus, high and lifted up, and his train filling this temple, and his glory at work in this house. Does anybody want to see Jesus? I don't want to argue with you. I want to worship beside you. I don't want to be at odds with you. I want to look for Jesus with you. And Jesus asked in verse 16, what are you arguing with them about? What is the point of this? Why are you fussing? What is it you are mad about? Why are you arguing? Can I just pause a moment and ask you to stop arguing with people? Not you. People are arguing on Facebook, and people are arguing. I mean, people just fussing everywhere. What are you arguing about? Jesus asked. Why are you arguing? Folks just fuss out in the open. What used to shame us is now celebrated. Everyone is looking for a fight. This is not the measure of men. But Jesus begins to measure in this man's life. Because verse 17 said, a man in the crowd answered, teacher, I brought my son who is possessed by a spirit that has robbed him of speech. Whenever it seizes him, it throws him to the ground. He foams at the mouth, gnashes his teeth, and becomes rigid. This is sad. It's hard to read. It's heartbreaking to hear this father describing the spiritual condition, the physical condition of his child. Are you diagnosing this child? I think I read this as clearly as the Bible presents it, that this boy is possessed with an evil spirit. I do realize and understand that in Bible times, because there was not science and biology at the level or degree that you and I understand it, there was not diagnosis, and so they attributed all sickness to sin. They attributed all infirmity and physical ailment. They attributed that to sin. But this is clearly a spiritual condition where the enemy has come in and wreaked havoc in this boy's life, and his spiritual condition is down as low as it possibly can go. Obviously, this dad loves his kid. Obviously, he loves his family. There are fathers all over this room who love their kids, even if they are not sure how to help them. Jesus is saying, if you read between these lines, if you are willing to grow, if you are willing to learn, if you have a measure, I can help you. But the man starts pointing some blame. He said, I asked your disciples to drive out the spirit, but they could not. Dude, these disciples have known your boy all of 5 minutes. How long has he been in your care? I know you're blaming the youth leader and the Sunday school teacher, but we don't live with him 24/7. We get him a few minutes every week. You see, men, our measure takes responsibility. It doesn't shirk it. Our measure has to see what we can do better. Our measure is never to blame someone else. And Jesus, if you read the story, Jesus expresses some frustration. We're not exactly clear on who Jesus is aiming at, probably both sides of the issue, because there's plenty of teaching to go around, but Jesus calls out an unbelieving generation. How long shall I stay with you? How long shall I put up with you? Bring the boy to me. Again, men, I need you to hear me today. The answer is always Jesus. The argument that he's been having with people has not worked. The blame he is assigning has not helped his situation. But if I can get my family to Jesus, if I can get my marriage to Jesus, if I can get my finances to Jesus, if I can get in the presence of the Lord, then there is hope for me. That's why I celebrate so many men in this house, because of all the places you could be, of all the places you could have gone, you came into the house of the Lord. You're in the presence of the Lord. Somebody ought to give Jesus and great men a hand in this house today. I was texting with a group of pastors yesterday, and they were just being human. They were just being honest. Father's Day is typically one of the lowest attended Sundays of the year. And they're talking about, I know nobody's going to be there tomorrow. I know I'm already getting ready. I know it's going to be a low day. And I'm over here just smiling because I know my men. I know the men that I do life with. This is not the lowest attended Sunday of the year for us. Why? Because there's a bunch of men in this house. We're not arguing. arguing with anybody. We can get on the grill in a little while. We can throw the ball in a little while. But let me get in the presence of the Lord. I feel the Holy Ghost in this house. Let me get my praise on. Let me lift up my hands in the sanctuary. Let me bless the Lord, oh my soul, and all that is within me. Bless his holy name. I love what I feel in the house of the Lord. Man, get your family to Jesus. Get everything in your life to Jesus. Bring you to Jesus. Verse 20, so they brought him. They brought him up close to Jesus. And when the Spirit saw Jesus, when this Spirit in this boy saw Jesus, it immediately threw the boy into convulsion. He fell to the ground and rolled around foaming at the mouth. This is real, folks. I know it's a little uncomfortable. If you're not used to some spiritual conversations, you're wondering what in the world is going on. I'm reading straight out of the Bible. But spiritual possession, spiritual oppression, spiritual warfare, all of that is real. And I'm not suggesting anyone in your house is possessed, but we are in a spiritual fight. I'm not suggesting you're losing the battle, but we are in a spiritual fight. That's why we can't take any spiritual days off. We can't get lax. We can't get at ease in Zion. I'm not doom and gloom. I'm all about victory, your victory and victory in your house. But you better wake up every morning looking for the devil, because you know he is up to something. He's going to try something. He's going to lay a trap somewhere. And so if I can just walk in faith and I can just keep my eyes open, then I know that somehow everything is going to be all right, because I'm not even going to give place to the devil. But watch. Jesus is measuring. Jesus is teaching. And Jesus, verse 21, asked the boy's father. The boy is convulsing at Jesus' feet. The boy is tormented right there in the presence of the Lord. But I need you to see this. Jesus did not speak to the demon. Jesus did not speak to the boy. Jesus talked to the dead. How long has he been like this? Dad, how long have you allowed this demon to be in your family? How long have you allowed hell to rage in your house? Jesus didn't ask him, have you taught him to throw a ball? Jesus didn't ask him, have you taught him to ride a bike? Jesus didn't ask him, have you taught him to hammer a nail? Nothing wrong with any of that. I hope you teach all of it. But Jesus said, we're in crisis in your family. How long have you allowed hell to rule your house? Because we got to measure some things, men. We got to figure out where we are. We got to figure out how we're doing. We got to figure out how everyone that's in our care, everyone that's living under our name, everyone who is an extension of us, how are they doing? And I so appreciate this father who is through arguing with anybody, and he's done blaming anyone. He said from childhood, the man confesses literally, this has been happening since he was a child. It's been going on a long time. It has often thrown him into fire or water to kill him. I hope you see this today, because this This problem did not escalate to this degree overnight. No. This started with small things. It started small with the things you figured you could ignore. Things you figured you could let go. But hear me today, the enemy never starts with big things. He always starts with small things. Bible says it's the little foxes. It's the small lies. Ladies and gentlemen, little foxes grow into big foxes. Little lies grow into a lifestyle of lies. A little attitude, that's just that teenage attitude, it turns into trouble. How long has it been like this? How long has this been going? I had no idea. But now that I'm measuring, now that I'm putting my tape on this, now that I'm seeing this for what it is, now that I'm really taking a hard look at my life, whoo, maybe it started with my 13-year-old deciding he or she wasn't going to come to church. I let him choose. There's too many parents that are in this battle. Well, they don't want to come to church. TikTok told them they get a choice. And you haven't corrected it or taken the tick or the talk away. It starts with sports every Sunday and church becoming optional. We're just having a good time. We're just making memories. Please make memories. But would you just consider making sure that spiritual memories are right up there with all the others? I had someone tell me one time that their 9-year-old didn't get anything out of my preaching. My 9-year-old don't get anything out of your preaching. Well, first of all, we got a great program geared to that age group. But my second question is to ask you, how often does your 9-year-old hear you talking negatively about my preaching? For some reason, their head dropped low. And when it came up again, there were tears falling. And wait a minute. It's not your preaching after all. It's the fact that I keep talking about you and running you down that my kids don't want to serve. Can we just take some measurements? Can we just see where we are and where we need to be and what God is trying to do? And I want you to look, because I don't want to leave this story just yet. The dad says to Jesus, if you can do anything. And Jesus says, if I can do anything? What do you mean if I can do anything? The problem is not me. The problem is, if you can do anything, take pity on us and help us. Verse 23, if you can, said Jesus, Everything is possible for the one who believes. Watch this. Verse 24, immediately the boy's father exclaimed, I do believe. Help me overcome my unbelief. You see it? The dad turned from praying for his son and started praying for himself. You say, wait a minute, that sounds selfish. No. I can't help you if I'm not helped. That's the reason they tell you on the airplane, should this plane lose cabin pressure, secure the mask on yourself before helping your child. Why? Because if you're in panic, if you personally are in crisis, if you are gasping for air, you're not going to be able to calmly, safely, or successfully give help to your child. If you are in spiritual crisis, you're not going to be able to do anything about the crisis in your kid's life. If you're constantly measuring them and never measuring you, Lord, I believe. I don't have all this worked out. And he stopped trying to measure the Lord, and he stopped trying to measure his son, and he stopped blaming everyone else. And he realized, if I can get myself fixed, then my family can be free. This, ladies and gentlemen, is the measure of a man. I want victory for my family. But if I want victory for my family, I have to get victory for myself. I want my kids to pray. But if I want my kids to pray, then I have to pray. If I want my family to worship, then I have to go first in worship. Pastor Darrell, are you trying to turn us men into a bunch of emotional crybabies? No, I'm really not. But if you need to shed a tear, that's all right with me too. You're trying to get us to come around. Do what feels right. Just don't sit there. Just don't give up. Just don't throw in the towel. Just don't walk away. Start measuring. Start trying to figure out what do I got? Who am I? Checking my measure. Because something is about to change in my life. Father, I pray for every man in this room. I trust in God. I pray for every man in this room today. Every little boy in a grown body. Every weak man that presents strong. Every man that came in with a smile today, but somewhere on the inside, there is torment. There is pain. I pray for men. I pray for the family that lives with them. I pray for their kids. Some kids may be far from us today. It may be a whole process we're having to work through in our lives, but Lord, I'm measuring to see how much better I can be. I'm measuring to see how much more I can do. In Jesus' name.